Welcome back to Radio Entrepreneurs. I'm Jonathan Friedman, and today we're coming to you from the offices of Tarlo Breed, Hart & Rogers. Mark Z, always a pleasure to be on with you.
John, always a pleasure, and working with the best of the best.
And our next guest in is Adam Sims. Adam's a senior partner with Pierce Davis and Paratano. Welcome to Radio Entrepreneurs.
Thank you.
I know it's not your first time, so welcome back.
Well, thank you very much.
So we have some interesting things you want to talk about, some topical and timely things, some new laws in Massachusetts. Why don't we start with that?
Well, as I mentioned just before we went on, for people that do what I do, which is typically defense work, both public and private officials, Massachusetts has just enacted, soon to be implemented, two new laws. So for us, it's sort of the gift that keeps on giving, because you can rest assured there will be some litigation that flows out of these two pieces of legislation. First, the Equal Pay Act, which is somewhat of a misnomer, but that's the way everybody refers to it. I believe that goes into effect next month or April, and right. Also what's called the Pregnancy Act, which is, there is a federal pregnancy law already.
And I think it's not acting like you're pregnant.
Correct. In a nutshell, you can't, as an employer, public or private, take any action that would be an adverse employment action simply because someone is pregnant or needs some accommodations due to the pregnancy, things of that nature. It sort of fills in a void between the federal law and other federal laws like the ADA.
Okay. So these all fall under the rubric of non-discrimination in some
correct.
Case.
Correct. Yep. I mean, the American with Disabilities Act, if it's conceivably you could have a very difficult pregnancy, mm-hmm. Or under the FMLA, where someone requests up to 12 weeks of leave under the FMLA. I think what the state law, as I say, sort of fills a void that at least our legislature thought needed to be covered between existing federal law and what is a new state law.
Okay.
The Equal Pay Act, as it's commonly referred to, is just that. I mean, this is a really interesting piece of legislation for a number of reasons. Since I'm a defense attorney, I'll start with the more draconian provisions. I mean, this is a strict liability piece of legislation, which is rare in Massachusetts.
So help break that down for us a little bit.
All right. So basically what the law does is wants to even the playing field between men and women, and so that they receive equal pay for similar, comparable work.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, the Attorney General's office is supposed to issue some regulations to give some guidance, if you will, as to what that means.
Define similar work,
define comparable work. Right. What does it mean if you're on a trading desk and you make a lot more than someone else next to you, but you have the better customers? How does something like that play out in this piece of legislation? So the AG's office has not issued the guidance yet. And when I mentioned draconian, it calls for if a public employer or private employer is found liable, that is some pay disparity between men and women, then it is liable in damages for up to double damages. Hmm. And the finding is strict liability, what I meant is if the Office of the Attorney General, whomever it is that comes in to do an investigation, finds that Acme Inc. Has discriminated against men and women, even if unintentionally, it just evolved over the years that there's a disparity in pay for no particular reason, without right. design, without intending to. There's no defense.
What I wanted to just interject, you know, the interesting part about it is, as you say, it's like the strict liability, is that employers, when they bring on people, for example, this is the joy of the placement business that I'm in, is that what they found is the reason why they had this law is that a lot of women went the way they project themselves on interviews, for some reason, psychologically or whatever, they found that employers will say, what are you looking for? And they don't push back as much as men. And so what happens is what they're saying is now you can just say pay for what the job pays. You can't say what you're looking for, because a lot of people, particularly they found women, will say, well, I'm looking for this. And employers will say, that's fine, as opposed to some male candidates. And that's where maybe that's one theory for the discrepancy. Male candidates will push back a little bit more. So now by having sort of a strict liability situation, what the employers have to do is they've got to say, this is what the job pays, not what somebody's looking for. Correct?
That's correct. In fact, under this law, you cannot ask a potential employee, the applicant, the interviewee, how much he or she is making. That is one of those thou shalt nots.
Right.
Now, there may be some ways, if you're the employer, to get around that. I think it's probably still fair to say this is the range of pay for this position.
Correct.
Is that something that you might be comfortable with? But you cannot specifically ask someone how much they are making at that moment. You can't.
So it really ties hands for an employer that, you know, sort of says it's predestined or predetermined what this job is, as opposed to somebody that comes to the table that may have the qualifications and have a lot more than what comes to the table. So in some cases, it's really hamstringing employers in a lot of ways.
To some extent, but I think employers will find a way to nuance the question, if you will.
But Adam, you know what I, as a recruiter, I always say to our clients, pay what the position pays, because if you want somebody to stay with you and be with you for a period of time, if you're not paying them correctly, then recruiters like myself will then
find another home for them,
or they'll still approach us, or if we approach them, they'll be more open. Now, what's interesting is one of the drivers are, like, as a recruiter, when we're recruiting and firms take care of people or pay. So a lot of candidates will say, I'd be very interested in the opportunity, but I'm already getting X. They treat me well. I had a candidate like that yesterday. They treat me well. There's no pay issue. So one of the motivating factors for people leaving jobs is being underpaid. So what this will do in some cases, maybe even a lot of cases, will promote people being at jobs longer. Because it's like with the Massachusetts sick day policy, which obviously you know about, is a case where a lot of employers were not giving sick days. And I always said to clients, if somebody's sick, they're sick. You just don't want somebody to take too much advantage.
Abuse it, right.
So now where the state says you've got to do certain sick days, then people can't take advantage of it. So it's like in some ways what you're doing, you're legislating certain situations that might work out better in the end, correct?
That's entirely possible. I mean, I think you have to assume certain fundamental fairness between the parties, between the employer and the employee, whether it's a prospective employee or not. You want someone to be honest and candid during an interview, and you want the same from the employer. Just before we move on, there's one other part of that legislation that is pretty interesting. So built into it is an affirmative defense, which I can explain a little bit what that means. But built into the Equal Pay Act is an explicit affirmative defense, so that if a company, again, Acme Inc., does a survey, actually takes the time, whether it's in-house or retains an accounting firm or some sort of consultant, to do a survey of its work staff, and using certain parameters, whether it's age, how long someone's been with the firm, education, various criteria, to make an assessment, to try to determine whether or not there is a disparity in pay, then even if that employer, Acme Inc., is found liable in a lawsuit or some through the AG's office or some public entity, having done that sort of a survey eliminates the possibility of being assessed the double or treble damages. Built right into the statute. Now, again, it's only an affirmative defense, which it would be incumbent upon the employer, whether it's in a lawsuit or some action brought by a state entity, to show this was a good faith survey. This wasn't a fly-by-the-night, you know, half-baked attempt. We made a real effort to try to address this situation.
You know what's interesting, now that you say that? I was wondering, honest to goodness, usually we get a call once or twice a year from a client that asked about certain salaries. We have gotten at least 15 calls in the last, I would say, in the last 3 or 4 months asking us about a salary survey. Can you do a salary survey? Can you tell us? And we'll do it as a courtesy for a client, but we'll go out and try to find some information or try to get some reports on that. And I was saying to myself, this is very interesting. That everybody seems to be asking this, and that makes sense now.
Well, so Sherlock Holmes said, Mark, there's no such thing as coincidence. I would suggest it's not just a coincidence
right.
that you've had that many calls
right.
so recently.
Right.
Because as this law becomes known among HR folks or people that do employment law and see that in the legislation is built in this affirmative defense,
right.
one would be silly not to take advantage of it, really. Just like in certain, I think it's age discrimination claims in particular, if you have the MCAD come in and do a training, which they will do fairly inexpensively based on the number of employees in your company. So it's a different price if you're, you know, Fidelity versus mm-hmm. a 10-person yeah. Acme Inc. Mm-hmm. But it's relatively inexpensive. And that, too, if memory serves me, serves as an affirmative defense for 2 years, I believe. So if you have the MCAD come in and put on a training, as long as everyone's included, from the CEO on down, you can then at least have available to you an affirmative defense in age discrimination claims that otherwise is not available to you. Hmm. And it's also a good thing to do.
Correct. Correct.
I mean,
very
simply
smart.
A good thing to do, especially in a very large workforce.
Oh, it's very smart. It's interesting. Even in my business, when recruiters are telling me about certain percentages and that other competitors do, it's nice to do a survey and talk to other people in my industry to find out. You know, I mean,
that's
obviously
that reality check. That,
right.
You know, I think you get tunnel vision inside your own organization. And you say, well, you know, this is the way we've always done it.
But, right.
You know, what you're saying is there are ways to, you know, it's good business practice. But by the same token, you're protecting yourself and your business.
Right.
Both.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is a good business practice. Of course, I'm talking about really non-union settings in this
right.
discussion. That's a whole nother level of complexity
right.
in terms of hiring where you have a limited pool. I mean,
right.
you can only, in that setting, and we run into that quite a bit in what I do, I wasn't hired, I wasn't promoted based on my race, religion, gender, sex, et cetera. Well, if you didn't take the promotional exam for sergeant to the fire department, you cannot be promoted.
Right.
Period.
Right.
And if you didn't score in the top three, then it's very unlikely because then the employer has to prove to the civil service that there was a reason they jumped over, if you will, the mm-hmm. three people ahead of you who scored higher on the exam.
Right.
So that's a whole nother level of complexity
right.
that we don't have to get into here, but it's the laws are the same. So what we've been talking about would apply to a union shop or not in terms of equal pay,
right.
although that's, again, that's somewhat different because a lot of those positions are an hourly wage that's in the contract itself negotiated by the union, by union representatives.
And when do these two provisions or new laws take effect?
I knew you were going to ask me that. I meant to look this morning. I believe the wage law, the Equal Pay Act, and if I have them reversed, my apologies to your listenership. One goes into effect in April, and the Pregnancy Act goes into effect in June this year, or vice versa.
I think it's, I'm like you. I think, because I've been, obviously the equal pay really affects our business. So I think it's June for the equal pay. But obviously, I'm going to check it out right after this.
Adam, great context and great advice. It sounds to me like all employers out there would do some good by making themselves aware of the changes and being proactive in a lot of cases to as an affirmative defense.
Critically important. I mean, I don't know why an employer would not take advantage, avail themselves of benefits written into the legislation by the legislature.
And it sounds to me like you'd be a person to speak to also in the event that they wanted to avoid the ugly part of litigation.
That's
take proactive measures to do that.
Most people try to avoid litigation. They can call me now or call me later, you know.
Well, speaking of that, and we're out of time for today, we'll have to have you back and talk about some of the other topical things that we had on the agenda for today. But tell us, how would people reach out to you? What's the best way for them to reach you?
The best way to reach me is at the office. It's Pierce Davis and Peritano. The phone number is 617-350-0950. I'm there a lot. My wife would say too much, but I'm there quite a bit of the time. That's probably the best way to reach me. My email, if that's easier for folks, it's asims with two M's, asims@piercedavis.com.
Wonderful. Our guest at Tarlow Breed, Hart & Rogers today has been Adam Sims with Pierce Davis and Peritano. And it's been a pleasure having you on Radio Entrepreneurs.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Adam.
And we'll be right back with another segment on Radio Entrepreneurs.